to you by Kroger. With Kroger delivery and free pickup, it's easy to get ready for tailgating. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Yeah, some of the sounds of the SEC. Georgia left no doubt again, putting the clamps on Kentucky and knocking the Cats from their unbeaten perch.
Kendall Milton back in there. One of those three tailbacks used today. They fake it to him. Bennett's going to loft it. Bowers has got it. Touchdown, Georgia again to the tight end.
It was a wild night in Knoxville. Oh, good Lord, man of mercy. Focus on that Vols fourth down play and the madness that fell from the stands after the call. Lost it all that, though. Ole Miss wins and goes to 6-1.
Now there's a fake on the handoff over the middle. Wide open Drummond. He catches it. He steps into the end zone. Touchdown, Ole Miss.
Meantime, Florida's quarterbacks had a rough one. They threw four interceptions. If that wasn't enough to get you beat by LSU on a night when Ed Orgeron was, you know, LSU's Ty Davis Price torched Florida, 287 rushing yards, three touchdowns in the win.
Johnson, again, quick handoff. Ty Davis Price to 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Fighting Tigers. 25-yard touchdown for Ty Davis Price.
And speaking of the Tigers, Auburn's not done yet. War Eagles put up 24 second-half points to win at Arkansas, and even their defense kicked in.
Jefferson drops into the end zone to throw. Got it.
And he sacked at the safety.
Fumble, fumble.
Ball is loose in the end zone. Auburn recovers. Touchdown, Auburn. They get the sack. They get the fumble. They get the touchdown.
Sounds of the SEC brought to you by Kroger. Kroger, fresh for everyone, and welcome back to the morning show. Hugh will be back tomorrow, and it is our great pleasure to have Jerome Jurinovich, former 92.9 The Game employee, used to do the midday show with Jamie Dukes way back in the day. But he's back in the seat and saddle again this morning, and he's here for Mike Griffith to jump into the program, talk a little SEC and college football. Of course, senior beat writer for UGA for DogNation.com, and he joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, guys.
Well, Mike, let's talk a little bit about that dominating win by Georgia here and the final drive. I'm kind of curious. I want you to speak to the win and where Georgia's at, obviously, and their dominance here. But the final drive here, does it give you any pause? I mean, they were able to go 22 plays. They end up 11 minutes on the clock. What did you think of them calling timeout with 7 seconds to go to try to score? How do you process that final drive, all of it?
Well, I mean, it's just Kentucky, you know, trying to make a statement. It's Georgia trading yardage for time. Somewhat conservative, but look, if you're Kirby Smart right now, it's survive in advance. I mean, that's all it is. If you win every week, and, you know, don't take offense to the word survive, but the whole point is you want to keep your record unbeaten. You want guys to stay as healthy as possible and minimize injuries. And it doesn't really matter what the score is. You're winning 30-7, and if Kentucky wants to grab 3, 5, 7 yards at a time and run time off the clock, you know, then that's what you're going to do because you're just trying to get out of there with a win. I mean, you get to the bye week, I don't think it should give anyone pause. I mean, it's unique. You don't often see 22-play touchdown drives, but I don't necessarily think that's too much of an indictment. You could argue that maybe Kirby Smart should call plays more aggressively and then when he's on offense try to score more in the fourth quarter, but that's not his mode. He gets conservative with a big lead and plays percentage football and just wants to get out of there.
Mike, everybody wants to talk about whether there will be a quarterback controversy. I mean, it started in the preseason. It's going to continue. I know the decision doesn't need to be made until Daniels is completely healthy, but do you even make that change now, the way Bennett especially played in the second half?
Well, yeah, because of the way Bennett played in the first half. You know, he was 5 of 10 and, you know, missed a couple open receivers. I mean, look, Georgia's a better team when JT Daniels is healthy. I mean, the guy was in SEC play 9-9 on third down throws with 9 third down conversions. And, you know, going into the Kentucky game, you put Stetson in, look at his third down passing in SEC games. He only converted 2 out of 14. There's a big difference, you know, when you're playing with a guy that has an NFL arm and NFL acumen. You know, you go into a pass-first mode, whereas with Stetson, you really do need the run game to get going, and you need that play action. Stetson's not a guy that's going to drop back and pick you apart in the pocket, nor is he a guy that you want to win. You want to try to get into a game and win in a shootout. And if we want to cut to the chase, do we think Stetson Bennett can beat Alabama? I'm not as confident in that as I am that JT Daniels could beat Alabama.
Mike Griffith of DogNation.com, senior UGA writer. Let's talk a little bit about the rest of the league in the nation here. Mike, let's talk Tennessee and the reaction you had to what happened in Knoxville Saturday night. Of course, this is the third week in October. That means Tennessee goes to Bama this week. Bama, by the way, 29-point favorite in this game over the Big Orange here. What did you make of that mess in Tennessee?
Well, it's like a plane crash. I don't just focus on the crash. I look at everything that led up to it. I look at how Lane Kiffin left that program under NCAA investigation. I look at how he trolled the program all week on social media and raised and heightened a lot of the emotions. I look at alcohol sales in Neyland Stadium. That's the first sellout since they've gone to alcohol sales. I look at the fact that it was a night game. I look at the fact that Ole Miss was exploiting a rule that stopped the clock for injured players, some that I think it's fair to question if they were really injured. I look at some questionable calls that went against Tennessee, and I'm not saying that this makes it right. It absolutely is not right. It was a dangerous situation. It sets a terrible precedent, and actions need to be taken. But there were a lot of things that went into that, and some of it Lane Kiffin was responsible for, or I should say irresponsible for. The guy's a jerk, and he pissed off a lot of people. And, I'm not saying it was right. It wasn't. But did Lane Kiffin pick that fight? Yeah, he did.
Not the first time he's done it either. And, of course, alcohol in a night game, that's always a interesting combination. What's next for LSU? I mean, you sit there and it was a lot more than just wins and losses lately for Coach O. I happen to love Coach O. I think he'll be back coaching one day, just not sure when. He's got 16.9 million reasons not to coach anytime soon. But where do the Tigers go from here?
Well, I just want to reiterate the point. I don't think what happened to Tennessee was right or justifiable, but I'm explaining why it happened. I'm not saying that that was the proper reaction.
Oh, yeah, I got what you're saying.
Why it happened. I just want to be very, very clear that I'm not justifying that behavior. As far as Ed Orgeron, I said on the SEC Network 2 weeks ago that if he didn't beat Auburn, they'd be looking for a coach. And this isn't just one game. Once again, we can't just say, well, you know, it's not. It's off-field issues. It's Title IX issues. It's a coach that had lost control of the program. Amazingly, less than 2 years after he won a national championship. Some folks just aren't capable and aren't built to handle success. And you look at a lot of things going on in Ed Orgeron's life with his divorce and his personal life, and it affected the on-the-field things. It was certainly a dynamic. The guy is Mel Tucker, and there's no doubt. I remember talking with Coach Tucker right after he was hired at Colorado. I was doing an interview with him at the Alabama-Clemson championship game week out there in California. And I asked him why he left Alabama to come with Kirby to Georgia. And he said he felt like Georgia was a place you could win at easier long-term than Alabama. Ideally, he said, you want to be at a school that dominates the state that's rich in talent. And that would include Georgia, Ohio State, and LSU also fits that model. Now, I went to Michigan State. I know there's a lot of people excited about Mel Tucker, and as he enters year two, he has the Spartans in the top 10 with a 7-0 record. But I also know it's difficult to sustain success in a state where Michigan is closer to Metro Detroit, has more money, and gets favorable treatment in the media. So long-term, LSU's a better job. Do I think Mel would leave? Yes. He left Colorado after 1 year. I expect that to be LSU's next head coach.
That is Mike Griffith. He is not alone in saying that Mel Tucker is going to be that guy. I think Luke Fickell to USC, Mel Tucker to LSU probably make a lot of sense here in those two major jobs that are open right now. We'll see kind of how all that plays out here. So you look at Alabama, they're dominating win at Mississippi State. I think they shut up a lot of the critics here, or at least maybe proved to a lot of people. You look at the national picture, Iowa just got worked. Purdue, by the way, sent out the tweet of the year. Purdue buried Iowa, right? And so they said, we can say it, it's clean, you can say it on the air. Purdue football on their official Twitter said that we just beat the number 2 out of Iowa. classic tweet. And they did. Yeah. And they did. And I mean, Iowa got exposed for what they were, what we all kind of thought they were. Mm-hmm. They were living on, you know, turnovers and stuff. So I look around here. I mean, I still think Alabama's the second best team in the nation, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about second best. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, if a two-loss Alabama can get in the playoff if Georgia beats them in the SEC championship game, which right now I would forecast. I mean, things can certainly change. We're sitting here in the middle of October. It'd be hard to imagine a two-loss Alabama getting in, particularly with this playoff committee now and the alliance and a lot of the politics. There were already politics with the college football playoff committee, and now it's really blurred. I'm just amazed that we still have this system in place. It seems like something out of the Hunger Games or something. But it's just crazy. I mean, it's just, you know, different regions and the representation, I guess, is where I was going with that. You know, Cincinnati – look, I don't want to hear they didn't play. They played at Notre Dame. They played at Indiana when Indiana was a ranked team. And Indiana's not a bad football team, by the way. You know, Cincinnati is moving to the Big 12. They, you know, we saw them go toe-to-toe with Georgia. That was no fluke. You know, Georgia was missing some players. Cincinnati was missing a couple, too. I think Cincinnati, if they run the table and continue to win impressively – deserves to be in. I really do. I don't think Ohio State's going to lose again. Again, Michigan State and Michigan are unbeaten, but a lot of what the Big Ten does, and John, you know this, they backload their schedule. This mm-hmm. is a bit of a mirage that there's this many Big Ten teams at the top. They have the good teams play each other later in the year. So Ohio State won't lose. Oklahoma probably won't lose again. I don't think Cincinnati will lose again. And I think Georgia right now would probably beat Alabama as things stand. And I'm assuming that JT Daniels gets back healthy also.
Well, it'll be very interesting. It's going to be a fabulous second half of the season. And Georgia now can rest up. And when the next time we talk, Mike, we'll be counting down to the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And that showdown with a Florida team that's kind of wondering, boy, I mean, they are all over the map. Mike, I do appreciate it. Thanks much.
Thank you.
Mike Griffith, DogNation.com. You can follow him on Twitter. He is he was lighting up Paul Feinbaum on TV. He'd love to see that, too. All right, up next, Dave Archer. And we'll get the Falcons analyst's thought on the NFL about where the Falcons are. Get his thoughts, too, on some of the other headlines. Like, maybe what does he think about the Braves, whether or not there's something special here. Arch will join us. John with Jerome Drinovich filling in for Hugh today. Morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Arch is next. Morning show with John and you on Sports Radio 92 on The Game. Normally a Falcons Monday. Today, bit of a Braves Monday because of what took place over the weekend here. We get ready for the return of the Falcons after the bye week this week. They will go face a Miami team that's kind of smarting a little bit after losing in London to the Jaguars. Yikes. Dave Archer, Atlanta Falcons analyst, joins us as he does every week. Brought to you by Jim Ellis Kia of Kennesaw, where you can build your Kia your way. Learn how at jimelliskia.com. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How could we not? How about the Bravos this weekend? A lot of fun to watch.
Hey, John, I got to jump in here real quick and tell you guys a quick story. So I moved to Atlanta in 1986, come from Pittsburgh, used to teams winning. Falcons start out 5-1. I got Falcon fever. Over the winter, I start dating a young lady. She goes to aerobics classes all winter. In the spring, early summer, she goes, hey, me and the girls from the aerobics class, we want to go see a Braves game. So they buy a bunch of tickets for one of those businessman specials, the middle of the week noon game. Eight of us go down there. Who's in the group? Dave Archer. I am starstruck. So we go, and we got decent seats. It's a lower level because it's 1987, and you can sit anywhere you want at a Braves game in 1987. And next thing you know, because we're all a bunch of sneakers, we're like, hey, let's try to get down to the front row. There's nobody sitting in front of us. So we go walking down to the front row right behind home plate, and the usher comes up and goes, excuse me, can I see your tickets? Are you supposed to be here? I said, that's David Archer, the quarterback of the Falcons. He goes, enjoy the game. I got to sit in the front row because of Dave Archer. That's all I'm saying right there.
That's a classic, man. That was a lot of fun, wasn't it? That
yeah.
was fun.
And the Cardinals won. I know you were happy. But we're all Braves fans
now.
Oh,
yeah. No, I was – I grew up a Cardinals fan. That was one of the reasons I was there. But it didn't hurt when the Braves won. It certainly didn't hurt this weekend when they won. That's a great one, man. I'd forgotten about that. I appreciate the memory.
Oh, it was one of my favorite memories of moving here.
Jerome, did you marry her? I mean,
come on, John.
Okay, just check it.
Stop. That's 1987.
you, Yeah, okay, all right. We all went through CNN marriages. I went through two. Dave, so tell me about the Falcons this bye week. I know it was an early bye week, but productive, you think? I mean, the team used this to its advantage?
Well, I would think that, yeah, any team's going to try to get healthy. I mean, certainly the Braves are not one of these teams that hasn't had injuries, so they've had guys go down. Some guys are not going to be back even with the bye week, but you will get a couple players back. Be interesting to see what happens with Ridley. Obviously, it's a little bit of a strained situation there, a different situation there. It looks like Gage will probably be ready to go, the receivers. But you liked what you looked like last Sunday when you didn't have all those players in. But it's a little bit early for a bye week, guys. You know, you'd like to recharge your battery about midseason, you know, week 8, week 9. Hey, you take it when you get it. You got it in week 6 of the season. So you try to recharge and get ready for this long stretch down the back.
I've always hated the early bye weeks. You need them late when you're all banged up. But it is what it is, and you don't make the schedule. So because of all these injuries, we finally got to see Kyle Pitts have a breakout game. Are we going to see him featured more in the offense going forward? Because this young player is obviously going to be a star.
Yeah, no question about it. He certainly looked like a guy that was comfortable. And I think that the big part about it, Jerome, is the fact that, you know, he's been trying to learn so much. When he lines up outside the numbers or in the slot or if he's off the ball tight or on the ball tight, those are all different formations and all different calls that he's having to look for and learn. That's the call in the huddle. Then if you change the play at the line of scrimmage, there's another set of circumstances he's got to be able to absorb as well. So I've been saying it for a number of weeks. He's been drinking through a fire hose trying to absorb this offense. Last Sunday was the first time, a week ago Sunday, was the first time he looked like he was just playing football. And you could see the skill set. You're exactly right. The guy's the star to making. Just got to put him in position to make plays. But then he's also got to be able to turn his athleticism loose and just play free. I thought that two Sundays ago, was as free as I've seen him play so far. And I think that that's just an omen for teams down the road that this is what this guy can be. Let's hope that that's what you get the rest of the way. But certainly there are going to be things, nuances, you're going to change each week. And all players have to absorb new parts of the game plan. But I really like where he is right now, and I think there's no question that they'll continue to try to get him the rock.
Dave Archer, Falcons analyst, brought to you by JimEllisKia.com. Dave, when we saw the Falcons, or at least saw the videos that came out of the practice with the Miami Dolphins in the preseason, and then watched that preseason game where the Dolphins just kind of worked us a little bit, I wouldn't have told you the Dolphins were going to be 1-5 and losing to the Jaguars and reeling the way they are. What do you make of the Dolphins right now?
Well, a little bit of flux at quarterback. Of course, Tua started the first couple of games, then Tua got hurt, and Jacoby Brissett took over. It is a little bit of it's a new system for them offensively, so they're trying to absorb what they're doing. They've gone to this short passing attack. I thought they looked really good, especially that opening drive against Jacksonville where they ate up almost 8 minutes off the clock. Tua, I think, with 9 of 10 in the drive. Looked a lot like our preseason game, quite frankly. If you go back and look at that preseason game, Tua looked really sharp, throwing the short passes. They've got some really good players now. Jalen Waddle can go get it. Gesicki, the tight end, is an outstanding player. Miles Gaskin, they found a way to work him in. The former running back at Washington is now a Washington Huskies in college. He's a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield. So it's a short passing attack. They like to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands. It'll be a bit of a test. Atlanta didn't handle it well when we went down there during the game. But as you said, during practice, Atlanta had some good days against that defense. They've got a group up front that can rush you some. They want to blitz. They want to show you different looks in the secondary where they bring four. Sometimes they bring six. So it'll be some adjustment, a lot of film study. But I expect Atlanta to play well in this game.
David, I don't want to be one of those guys, oh my goodness, after week 6 saying the next game is a must win. But after what happened against the Washington football team, and look, they're playing for a wild card because of what Tampa Bay does. How important is a win? I know every single Sunday is an important game. I understand that. I don't want to use the old cliche, but this is almost a must win because of it is there for the taking.
Well, I think anytime, Jerome, you got some some games that you feel like you're as good as or better than the team you're playing, got to find a way to win those games. We let one get away here in our building about 2 weeks ago against Washington. So you can't allow one to get on the road. This will not be an easy game. I think Miami will play well. I thought they played well against Jacksonville. Give Jacksonville credit for playing well in the second half. I thought Miami outplayed them in the first half. So as you guys know, the NFL is usually about one possession at the end of the game or a couple possessions at the end of games. Just keep yourself in position to win the football game on the road. I think Atlanta will do that. I'm expecting a solid performance. But, yeah, I don't know the must-win thing. I hear what you're saying about that. Obviously, the must-wins are whether you eliminate you from the playoffs or keeps you in the playoffs. Could you say that about a game that's in week 7, essentially your sixth game of the year? I guess you could, based on the way the schedule looks in the back half with how the teams are stacking up that you're going to have to play down the stretch. But you don't know what those teams are going to look like in week 13 or week 14 either. So I think the most important game is a lot like players say. That's the next one in your schedule. So this is the most important game on our schedule right now.
Dave Archer joining us this morning. Dave, go back through your playing days and your, you know, from Iowa State and even in, you know, when you were back in Idaho and, of course, through your years with the Falcons and everything that you went through in terms of your professional career. And apply it to the Braves at the moment. The Braves have had three straight at last at bat, two straight walk-offs wins in the postseason against teams that were, you know, in theory better than them. Is when you got something special, does a team know it's got something special, or are they just riding a high at the moment, or is there something larger here for them?
No, I think that there's some value to that, John. I think that anytime a lot of it has to do with confidence and just your feeling that you're going to be able to get it done. And you have to be able to have gotten it done to have that feeling, right? And so the Braves, the last couple of games, have been able to feel that way. They did it during the regular season. But you got to make it happen when it's the most important, and they've done that the last two games out. So when I look back on games, finding a way to win games at the end, what it does is it provides you that confidence. When you get late in games, the anxiety doesn't start to set place. Oh, no, we're done. You feel like you're going to be able to get it done, and I think that that's what frees up the athlete. I think that guys getting tight down the stretch, because they haven't been there or haven't done it, haven't been able to accomplish it, finish the job. And Atlanta now, the Braves now, will go out to L.A. with that feeling, we can do this. We've done it before. They've been able to finish. That's what players are looking for. They want to be free and play free. I talk about Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts will step on the field this week and get ready to play. He's going to be a lot freer player. A lot of the anxieties that he didn't know about in games have been alleviated. He put those away. Hey, I belong at this level. I can make plays at this level. And that's what that is. And if that's the special feeling, I think it's a special feeling you're talking about. There's obviously the camaraderie of the team and all that. But the Braves be doing with their best player on the bench and not able to play is incredible. And what that is just confidence of guys saying, hey, I can get it done. I'm the guy. Put me in. I want to be the guy that's at the plate with the final at bat.
Dave, as always, look forward to it. Get a win in Miami and get back to .500 and get this Falcons rolling in their air quote second half of the season. Thanks much.
Great to be with you guys. Y'all take care. Jerome, nice talking to you, buddy.
All right, Dave. If there's a lesson to be learned here, you want to sit in the front row, you hang out with Dave Archer. He's always got the good seats.
He's in front
Y'all
row.
Be good. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Dave Archer brought to you by JimEllisKia.com. All right, we get into the kind of meat of the show here, still to come. Mike Conney in the 9 o'clock hour talking Atlanta United, talking about the Hawks who start this week. Sweet Tea, she's got a little Hawks action going on because she's the new in-game host of the Atlanta Hawks, and she's also reacting to what she's seeing with the Braves as well. And we'll do a Sweet Tea segment with her and bring her into the program, get you up to speed on this. Going to be a fun week. We've got Braves in L.A. We got Hawks starting on Thursday. And then the Falcons are back, and United is playing. Man, a mercy. Enjoy. Okay. Ooh, wow. Stand by for news. Sweet Tea next on the morning show with John and today Jerome Jurinovich filling in for Big Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Miss out on a hot topic?
Yeah.
No worries. Anitra's got you covered as Sweet Tea brings the tea on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
On Monday at 8:40, time for Sweet Tea. Anitra, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, John?
Good. We have Jerome Cherinovich in today.
Yeah. I know. I'm so over the moon. Jerome, how are you?
Anitra! Oh, it's great to hear your voice talking to you. I hear it all the time on the radio, but it's great to talk to you.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So, John, quick story before we get started with Sweet Tea. Mm-hmm. When I started off as, well, actually, when I had my first interview to intern with the station, Sean mm-hmm. asked me which, that was back when you could actually choose which show you interned on. And so he asked me which show I wanted to intern on, and there was no question for me. It was Jerome and Jamie, by far, because the two of them were like big inspirations to me because they had both done TV and radio, and that was really what I was looking to do. So they took me under their wing, and I know Jerome had to transition very, very quickly over to then Fox Sports South because of the demanding schedule with his Braves and Hawks and everything, but just that month of being with him was just fantastic, and we've just kind of stayed connected ever since. So I was just glad to hear his voice on the show this
morning.
Well,
first of all, that was the best month Jamie and I ever had on the air. Okay, when the three of us were out there. And be honest with you, Tanitra, it's okay. And I know in this day and age, you got to be careful how you say things. But you really wanted to intern with us because Jamie and I were the best looking guys on here.
Well, hey, you know what? I'm not mad.
Okay, let's
I'm
not go mad. Any further than that because then yeah. John will get mad.
Then John will get mad.
I'm trying not to get fired. John. I'm helping out for a day, so I got to be
careful. Right. We need you back. We want you to come back, Jerome. Right. We want you to come back.
I'm comfortable in my own skin here. I'm good. You know.
Well, listen, Jerome, on a day like this, there is nothing you can say that really, for the most part, that's going to turn John off, make him mad, make him disappointed. Because when the Braves do what the Braves did last night, there's nothing you can do with him. Nothing you can do with him.
That's kind of what I was thinking. You know, I mean, United won, Braves won. Falcons, you know, we'll see what happens with them. And then the Hawks get ready for – how excited are you for Thursday night?
Oh, man. I'm like a kid, like a little 12-year-old. Like, I was reading some articles last night just, you know, kind of get myself refamiliarized with what the history of the series has been in the last couple seasons. And I was just – I don't know. I got excited over a stat. One stat. And I was like, yeah. So, but anyway, getting two runs also in the preseason helped out tremendously, just kind of getting all the kinks out and everything. And then just one more thing. And, you know, I want to hear from Jerome, too, because I'm sure, you know, kind of seeing this series now from your perspective as an esteemed retired Valley Sports South sportscaster, that was kind of cool, too. But, yeah, just being there with the Hawks and kind of seeing the starting five get back on the court together, it was amazing. And I just kept saying, this is going to be something special again. This is going, barring injury, I'm being positive, half glass half full, this is going to be something special.
I have never been more excited about a Hawks season than I am this year. I moved back. I mentioned this when Dave Archer was on the show. I moved here in 1986, and they had mm-hmm. Neek, and they had a great run back then with Neek and Doc and those guys. And then we had Smitty, and of course, and Mookie and those guys. And we had some good teams, and we won 60 under Coach Bud. We had that mm-hmm. great run, and we had Joe Smooth and Joe Johnson, those guys. This season, because of what is on this team, mm-hmm. last year was clearly not a fluke. There isn't anybody that knows anything about the NBA that's going to sit there and go, oh, the Hawks were fluke. They'll barely make the playoffs. No way. This team is built to win and go deep in the playoffs, and they're just going to get better each and every year. And if Hunter plays a lot, look out, because that guy is a player. He flies under the radar because of the way John Collins jumps and because of Trey being Trey. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Hunter, he is a special player.
Yeah, he definitely is. He was probably when I did my pregame hit, he's who I was looking for. I wanted to see what he was going to do, and what he did in the first 6 minutes. It was something crazy, like 11 points. It was mind blowing. And for me, that's the thing when I was looking at our question of the morning, kind of who besides Trey do you need to be on from the start of the season? Can't afford to have them play their way into things. I want to see him. I don't want to see Dre play his way into things. I want to see Dre, you know, his body seems like it's 100% back. So I want to see Dre like that from day one. So this is my question, Jerome and John, to you guys. When you speak about elation, of a win or what a team's doing, so on and so forth. You know, PJ Fleck, he's got mad energy, the Golden Gophers head coach. He has a knack for getting carried away. And John, I'm sorry to tell you this part of the story. Of course, Minnesota, they are at 4-2. They beat Nebraska. That was their last win. I'm sorry to take it down.
Rowboat.
Right. But the 30-23 win, you know, Fleck got a little carried away there and he jumped into the arms of a police officer as he was walking off the field heading into the locker room. Not sure if the officer was there for security or whatever, but of course that's now become, you know, a meme for PJ Fleck. But it made me think, like, you guys think for a second, give you a moment to pause. What's the most bizarre thing you have ever done in a moment of unbridled joy for your sports team? Or, you know, I'll give you guys a pass if it's any team. And so I'll give you guys also what Abe and Oren said. So Abe said he ripped an old shirt, a Hulk Hogan style shirt, years ago after a big win for Florida in the college football playoff. And then Oren shaved off all of his hair and donated it to a charity after Stanford beat Oregon in 2012. Basically meant SEC championship game winner went to BCS championship game. So how about you guys? What's the most bizarre thing you've ever done in a moment of unbridled joy, particularly for your sports team?
John, you better go first on that one because I got to think. You know, when you get to my age, it's hard to remember. And number two, I've probably done a lot of stupid stuff.
Well, I've said this before. You know, I've been fortunate enough in my life to be witness in person to a lot of great sports moments in Atlanta sports history. A lot of great moments. But the one that I missed was the World Series against the Indians. I got called to a network meeting in New York, and I had to fly out that morning of the clinching game. Mm-hmm. And so I end up, we're staying at some stupid, you know, hotel with a typical hotel bar, you know, right? And, you know, and I'm trying to go to a sports bar someplace, you know, and the people, the stuff shirts are like, no, we're having cocktails at the bar. I'm like, I don't want cocktails at the bar. I want to go watch the game. So the Braves win, and I'm sitting up because they're sitting at a table, for crying out loud, and I walk up to this, you know, piano bar, and I'm sitting with a small TV at the bar, and I'm sitting there, and they're like, what are you doing? I said, I'm watching the end of the World Series, my team. And then the Braves win, and I start yelling out, whoop, whoop, whoop. I mean, I'm raising, and people are like, like it was some kind of library or something. I'm like, we're drinking on my team. So I, you know, and my bosses are like download. I'm like, no, I sorry, you can fire me. I ain't downloading. So I was like, I didn't care.
You had a moment, but you had to experience that in its fullness. I get it.
Well, mine isn't quite as colorful, but back when when the Steelers had their Super Bowl run in Jerome Bettis' final year. So I'm living in Denver at the time, working for the Avalanche and the Nuggets. Jamie Morrison, as John, you remember, we worked together for years at CNN,
sure.
Longtime yeah. producer.
Mm-hmm. Like Jamie a lot.
Jamie is he's there at Invesco as a member of the media. He's covering it for whatever entity he was working for at the time. Well, I'm there as a fan, but I also had access to the press box. So I come up there, and next thing you know, by the late in the second half, it had really turned in. All the terrible tiles and Steeler fans were on the first level because Bronco fans were leaving in droves as we dominated that AFC championship game. And there was a big play in the game, and Jamie and I jumped into each other's arms, and we're screaming. We are screaming, and we're in the press box. And as you know, you're not allowed to do
right,
that.
Right, you cannot.
And they're
right.
looking at us, and they're giving us the, you know, not the middle finger, but the index finger. Get out,
right.
Not allowed. We're like, who cares? We're going to the Super Bowl. And we just took off out of there, and we were screaming like banshees as we got on the other side of the door, like little kids, but it was just awesome. Because we had waited so long. It had been
right.
so long. I mean, we grew up on that team, and they hadn't mm-hmm. been back. And who would have thought that a wild card was going to run the table like that and then go in and win at Denver, of all places?
I know. Oh, Jerome, you just made my
got thrown out of a press
happy.
Box first time in my life. And only time.
Right. Well, as a Steelers fan who even, you know, I side-eyed even last night, by the way. Like, it didn't make me happy that we won because I'm like, oh, God, why do we have to gut stuff out? There's no Russell Wilson. But anyway, you just took me back to a happy place. So thank you for that.
Happy to do it.
Yeah, no, I hate and I love them all at the same time. What can I say? Been rooting for them my entire life. So, but yeah, you do crazy things. And I will say this, and it's funny because I don't think I've ever told this story publicly very often, if at all. But someone bet me years ago that Jordan wasn't going to win his fifth championship. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Jordan's going to win in six. I mean, what are you talking about? And so I said, I believe that so much, I'm just going to book a flight to Chicago. Had never been to Chicago, knew no one in Chicago, did not have a ticket for the game, but I just booked a flight and, you know, just pulled up to one of those ticket offices and got a little standing room only ticket. And the Chicago Bulls fans were super duper nice, because once I got into the building, I'm like, you know, this is it. We're going to win tonight. Like, we're clinching. And I was like, I don't think Jordan's going to hit the shot, but we're going to win. And, you know, oh my God, Chicago Bulls fans were great. I got a seat, so I did not have to stand up in the standing room only circle around United Center. They bought me food the entire night. It was absolutely fantastic. The reason I say bizarre, a little weird, is because as a single female at the time, having gone to Chicago, having never been there and didn't know anybody there, that was kind of a little odd. That was kind of tricky to try that. But it was good, because, of course, that's the one where Jordan kicks it out to Steve Kerr and he hits the game-winning shot. And I saw grown men cry at a sports event. That was a beautiful thing.
Grown men cry. I've cried over sporting events, not out of happiness, though.
I love it. I love it. Thanks, guys.
All right, Tanitra Batiste on the Twitter at Tanitra Batiste. Sweet Tea brings the tea. New in-game host of the Atlanta Hawks at State Farm Arena, and you'll see her Thursday night if you're going to that game. We'll kind of reset at the top of the hour. Big weekend ahead. Big week ahead from a huge weekend for the Braves. Also in the next hour, Mike Connie joins the program with Jerome Drinovich in for Big Hugh today. Hugh, good news is Hugh back, and I didn't mean to slight you, Hugh back tomorrow and regaling us with all his stories from his vacation and getting his perspective on things.
I'm all excited, right, well, Hugh's back tomorrow. Yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah. me too. As we get ready for what it could be a memorable week ahead. Next.